The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
First podcast of 2026 for the Future Sox podcast, part of the Just Baseball Media Network. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me as always, my co-host, Mr. James Fox. Tonight we'll be getting into some Baseball America stuff that popped up on their podcast. We'll get into the Jared Kelenic signing. We'll get into some, I guess I will probably get into a little tiny bit of the international side of our signings. And then also this very strange Japanese market that's been going on this year. James, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's up? I got to back to work tomorrow. My house has been kind of crazy tonight. So,
yeah, me as well. I am not looking forward to it at all.
Yeah, like first my, time. I actually like got like 2 weeks. It's like talking to my wife about. I feel like we did like a ton of stuff, and like I needed it. But yeah, like going back is fine. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I don't know. You know. I kind of enjoyed the time off, but I guess I don't really have a choice. So I'm going back to work tomorrow, and we're filming a TV show at the casino, so that's kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah, so got that for like the next week and a half or something like that, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah, so all right. Well, moving along here. So this week on the Baseball America podcast, there were some claims made that I thought were pretty interesting, and you did as well. I'm going to go ahead and bring up the first clip from this stuff right here, and then we'll go ahead and react to it.
Who's going to be the number one farm system in baseball at that time?
I think we both have a similar answer here. So the obvious one to me, I think, is the White Sox. It's a pretty solid system now. It's kind of middle of the 30 systems.
Middle of the pack.
But kind of in that area, I'll say from like maybe 11 to 20, where it's fairly close. And it might be even closer from like 11 to 18, you know, where it's kind of like, who do you like a little bit better? Whose development do you trust a little bit more? So they have some good prospects. They have some pitching prospects that I don't think all of them will graduate. They have a top hitting prospect in Caleb Bonnemer, who I don't believe will graduate unless things go much better than we can even imagine as the biggest Caleb Bonnemer fans outside of his parents.
I was going to say, we're big Bonnemer fans. If he's in the big leagues and graduated this time next year, watch out.
Yeah, exactly. And they have the number one pick. So they have the number one pick. They have all the bonus pull money that goes with that. So they could end up with two, maybe even three prospects. And oh, by the way, they're going to end up with more than likely, you know, Rock Chulowski, who for all intents and purposes is considered one of the best position, college position prospects of the last decade.
Your thoughts on that, James?
Well, so how much do you think us having Jeff on like springboarded these thoughts, like into them thinking about the White Sox?
You know, I thought that I kind of had the same question, and you know, Beefloaf messaged me afterwards after Jeff was on, and he's like, you know, it's really interesting that, you know, listening to the national guys and then listening to you guys, and, you know, like, you guys know some of the little nuances that some of the, that seems to be lost on some of the national guys, like injuries per se. It's like, you know, you look at all these mountains of stats, and I'm sure when you have to like do a ton of teams,
yeah, as right, you know, exactly,
that, you know, like that stuff is going to get a little bit lost on you a little bit, maybe. So, I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah.
So I actually have lots of thoughts on this. So one of the things that I think, not that we're like ahead of others, right, but like, I feel like both of us have like, I feel like we're less worried about Noah Schultz than like other publications are, because I just like I kind of know what he went through last year, and I just like don't know how real like those statistics were, right? Like, I just, like, if he's healthy, like, I think he's going to be good. And yeah, like, it's not enough innings, right? Like, we can quibble over, like where does he end his season? How many innings can he throw? That sort of stuff. But I mean, like he's good. Like, I'm not worried that his results mean that he's, like, a number four starter or something all of a sudden, right? Like, you know, you've been down on Hagen. He's rebounded. Like, even him, though, like, so the thing that fascinates me, right? Like, they have five top 100 prospects pretty much everywhere. And then I think we might see Opper and McDougal in certain places, like occasionally, right? And then I think, you know, like a lot of what we'll get to in a minute will hinge on Jaden Fowski, I think. And then Antonacci kind of is what it is, right? But after that, like, I tried to do this to prep for the show, like, do the top 30 right now, like, dude, 10 through 20 is tough, and it's like not great, right, when you stack it up against other systems. So the Sox are very top heavy. I don't know that I necessarily agree with them, because I think the way they're looking at it is like they think one of the pitchers for sure is probably still on the list at this time next year, and I kind of feel like Hagen, Noah, and Braden are all off the list in the
possibly even Tanner as well.
Yeah, well, he'll definitely be off, right? So I think a lot of it hinges on, like, is Caleb Bonimer a top 25 prospect in baseball? Maybe by then, right? How good is Billy Carlson? You add Rock Chalowski to the system, plus a second rounder, like Christian Opper, if he's like firmly a top 100 guy, then you need a lot from Jaden Fowski, from Blake Larson coming back, like a guy like that. A guy that you know, somebody who you pay $4 million to in the second round. So yeah, I think it's likely that maybe they have like a top 10 system, and I haven't looked at the other systems like before we talked, right? But like, I would bet against the Sox having the number one system at this point next year, but it was still cool that that was like the first team they mentioned. I think when you look at a team like the Rays, right, with $20 million to spend and like seven picks in the top 100, like, I just, you know, and they always trade players and get prospects in return, right? Like, I just, like, don't know how many more trade returns the White Sox have in them. And while I think they're making gains internationally, which we'll get to, they just don't have enough international prospects right now. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really agree with them, but I think it's cool that we're in the news.
Yeah, as James mentions here, you know, it's depending on graduations. So, you know, it's kind of tough to project them at number one, knowing that so many of their high, you know, their top end talent's going to be moving to the majors at some point, hopefully in 2026.
I think the way they do look at it, though, and they made one comment about this is, yeah, add Albert Hughes. That's funny.
who is it doesn't exist.
Like, say, and obviously we're taking some liberties here by already including Rock Chalowski, right? But like, if they add Rock Chalowski and he's like top 25, and then he finishes the year in like Birmingham, like there's a chance he's a top 10 prospect in baseball next offseason, right? And then if you also have Bonimer, Carlson, it's like, so I get where they're coming from. I just, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of small market teams with like a bunch of picks and stuff to add to their mix.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, and we're still waiting, trying to get that comp pick, and still hasn't come yet.
Yeah, that would be nice if they could get one in a deal somewhere here.
Yeah, I think that would be huge in boosting the overall ranking of the system, getting a little bit more top-end talent in there. But again, I think it really speaks to the fact, to how the White Sox scouting system has really done in order to make the system at least deeper so it can be mentioned in that top conversation.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of it is like the number one pick helps. You have multiple top 100 prospects right now. I don't know, man. Like, I think Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz are going to spend a lot of time in the big leagues and graduate this year. Same thing with Braden Montgomery. So you're taking three top 100 guys, like, right off the list, you know? So what do you think about just, like, how much they like Caleb Bonimer?
B.A.?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty awesome. I mean, you look at the underlying metrics on him, you know, with barrel rate and stuff like that, it makes sense. I'm a little bit surprised that he's got that much, you know, that he's getting that much a run over there. I mean, like, I like him. Don't get me wrong. And I think that he's talented. I'm just surprised, you know, that from them, that they're that high on him.
Yeah, I mean, he had a really good year. And he's up there really. I mean, you know, it's not that it's make or break, right? I feel like he's going to probably go back to Winston and he'll be good. Like, if he's good in Birmingham, then yeah, I mean, then you're talking about him being like a top 30 prospect in baseball, you know? Like, I mean, they were what even Ponce with us throughout, so what, Gunnar Henderson comps, right? So, that's pretty interesting for him. I know James Fegan just did the Fangraphs list and they have Bonimer 1. I think it's going to be an interesting debate when we do ours. Like, you know, it's still tough for me to not have the pitchers up there just because of the proximity to the majors. But yeah, so I do think, you know,
Braden too,
Bonimer's,
you know,
up high everywhere. And him, like, look, I understand it's probably a corner and it's a ton of strikeouts. So, like, I get Bonimer over Braden.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the same thing, though.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, because you've only seen Bonimer at most, you know, with like, you know, 50 at bats in advanced A or something
right.
like that.
Yeah,
so.
He's great that he's a high school kid that like destroyed A ball. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But we like still need more than that. I actually think like the guy with the next highest upside, and like I know we both are big time Tanner McDougal guys, but like I think Christian Opper could like really pop. Like if Christian Opper goes to Birmingham and he's really good. Like that's a lefty that throws 98. Like it's going to be a top 50. Like he could jump from like, you know, he's 91 and then all of a sudden he's in the top 50. Like when people see him.
Yeah. I mean, nobody was talking about Tanner McDougal before this year, this past year.
The only guy that did was Keith Law, right? Keith Law had him like, Keith Law did like a weird, like he does like a top five, like, so he did like the top five prospects in the system type of thing, and then he shouted out Tanner. I think he had him like 7 coming into last year, which nobody did that. So
I didn't even have, I love that guy, and I didn't even have him up.
So he must have had some information from Cressy or scouts or something that were like, you know, this dude did this and this, and like he's gonna be awesome type thing, because like Keith was ahead of it.
Yeah. Just to give you guys a heads up in the comments here, we will go to the international market stuff. We're just going to do it probably at the tail end of the show, just because, you know, James has got his article that he put out, and we'll probably talk a bunch more about that next week. So, all right, so I'm going to move to their hot take at the end of the show. Which I also found pretty interesting. Let us take a listen.
I'm going to throw another one out here. I think that the White Sox end up with a 500 record. I think that's pretty bold.
But that is bold, because I do believe a 500 record for the White Sox would mean that their two-year improvement window would be one of the greatest two-year surges we've ever seen, because when you start that low, you have so far to go just to get back to 500.
It's just another 21 game. We got to coax out of him. I think the lineup could get a little bit better, maybe more calm.
21 games
has a solid season for him. They don't trade Louis Robert. They have both of these catchers still. And, you know, the pitching staff is young enough that maybe they could figure something out here. I don't know. They have Sean Newcomb and Anthony Kay at the back, but.
Could you imagine two years with a 20-game improvement?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think like 81 wins is going to be tough. I mean, I hope it's 75. Like, I'll feel great. I don't know that they have enough pitching. It's like one of the things that I kind of said when, like, after they signed Murakami, I feel like I had buddies and stuff. There were like a lot of people like, well, just keep Robert now and try to win. And it's like, okay, like, if you want to keep Robert, like, for our, like, entertainment, because you're not going to get anything for him, like, cool. Like, that's fine. But, like, I don't think they have the pitching staff to actually think that you're going to, like, win consistently. I just hope the baseball is more fun and you find some long-term pieces and stuff like that. But yeah, man, that would sign me up for 500. That would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. I'm kind of leaning in your direction a little bit. I'm kind of thinking probably another 10, 15 games maybe. You know, still under 500 is my guess. But, you know, the thing is that I saw you have this interaction on Twitter this week where somebody was like, oh, I thought we had enough pitching. You know, like trying to, you know, get one over on you here. And it's not the problem that there aren't enough pitchers with top of the line stuff. The issue is that they don't have any experience yet.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you told me that Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith and Tanner McDougal are all awesome and pitching in the big leagues, then yeah, I mean, then they have enough pitching. I just like, what are we doing here? Like, we can't say that. I mean, like, right now, like, there's a chance that Sean Newcomb is in your rotation. You know, like, I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah. You could, I mean, it depends on like what kind of thing you're going to get out of the guys that are being brought up. You know, you expect him to immediately be Paul Skeens when they come up just because they got the stuff. Or, I mean, you know, like if I remember correctly, Tarik Skubal wasn't amazing right out of the gate. And if you were to get great stuff out of him without the experience to be able to navigate a longer set of innings, I could see that being a thing. And that would be why you would fall short of 500. But I do think that there is obviously there are some young arms coming up through the ranks that are going to pop up in MLB.
Yeah. Yeah, baseball, I like that idea. Like, Germán Márquez, I think, is the guy that I would sign if I had my pick of guys to sign with who might have some upside, who were really good before, would be him. Colorado's weird. I don't know what Bannister thinks of him. And then, honestly, like, the guy that's still a free agent in the bullpen that I'm kind of surprised by is Tyler Kinley. Was, like, awesome last year in the second half, and he's, like, not signed. I'm kind of surprised. Like, he's, like, 34, so I guess, like, you could sign him, and he could be terrible because bullpens are weird, but... That's the type of guy where if it was like Germán Márquez for like 1 year at $8 million and Tyler Kinley for 1 year at $5 million or something, like those are the types of moves I'd be making right now if they were possible.
Yeah. I mean, I expect there to be a couple more, you know, little signings. Yes. Everybody would love to trade for Chase Dolander.
That would be awesome.
That's not happening. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Rockies are known for pulling stupid bonehead trades, and I still don't think that that's going to happen to anybody.
Yeah.
So I Walker do feel like Buehler.
Was that the only thing that I feel like there was a lot of talk at Baseball America? There was like an article too, I think, that kind of talked about the White Sox. Like they've been doing kind of a ton, but I did like I told you, I tried to do a top 30 like in advance of this just to like ballpark it, and I think like. We're all going to have the same top 9 players, like in a different order. And then 10 is where it got a little bit like, I was like, do I like take a chance? Because I mean, 10 is like your Mason Adams, possibly, you know, but I mean, like Mason Adams is 26, you know, coming back from surgery. And then you have like Kyle Lodice, like right in that range. It's like not a ton of upside, you know, like to me. Like a guy I mentioned earlier, like Blake Larson is a guy that like nobody's thinking about. Like I can't like put him at 10. I don't think I can justify that. But I mean, like he had really loud stuff in instructs and they were really excited and then he blew out. Right. So like if that dude's making starts at Kannapolis at the end of the year or the, you know, in the middle of the season and he's nasty, it's like, oh yeah, this was a guy they took with a supplemental second rounder. Like it's an actual prospect, right? So, you know, I think guys like that, like Matthias Lacombe, like Aldrin Bautista, those are probably like their highest upside pitching prospects, like after the guys that we know. The position side, it's just a little bit different right now. Like there's just, you know, they kind of need an influx of like younger bats, and that's why you have your Fauske and Landon Hodge and some of those guys.
Yeah, no, I agree. We'll see what happens with, you know, as mentioned in the comments in here that, you know, if the TJ guys were ready, you know, you'd have a little bit more feeling that a couple of the guys were definitely going to pop, and you could allow some of the other guys to kind of flounder a little bit and get their sea legs under them. But
we'll like know a lot more, right? Like if Mason Adams is ready to go and like Drew Thorpe is like in your rotation, and maybe you stick Kai Bush in your bullpen and he's like the lefty that you've been trying to find like via trade and all these other moves, right? And you haven't been able to, that sort of thing. Like they got a ton of guys coming back. It's just not going to be like that at the beginning of the year. I mean, as of right now, I think like what Shane Smith, opening day starter, probably. Shane Smith was fun last year. That was cool. Like Shane Smith is like probably a number four starter. Like when you're good, number three starter. And then like you have Anthony Kay in your rotation and Davis Martin. And then you probably got like Sean Burke and Cannon battling for a spot still until some of these other guys are ready.
So Adrian brings up that Jedickson Paez was eighth on the Fangraphs list. That's another name, but here's the issue, is that he's Rule 5 and he's only pitched in advance day.
Yeah, like he's going to be a guy where like he's used as an opener, or he's like their long guy, or like a starter goes 4 2/3 and he comes in and throws two innings. Like I do think they're probably committed to like trying to keep him because he is like an actual prospect. I think when we go to do our top 30s, like some of us will have him like 10th probably. I mean, when you like go to like look at the like do the list. But yeah, I mean, it's not like the Sox have the luxury of just letting Jedickson Paez like start games in Birmingham. Like he has to be hidden in the big league bullpen all season.
Yeah, that makes it really difficult. Like I want to like him, and after watching, you know, I probably watched like 3 or 4 of his starts since we grabbed him. I want to like him, and he reminds me a lot of Mason Adams. But the issue is advanced day to the majors is a bonkers leap to expect anybody to be able to make.
For sure. And I actually think Mason Adams was like his peak performance in Double-A. Like I think him in Double-A is like the best he ever looked.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit interesting there. I'm hoping that he is he at Cressy, Mason Adams?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Good. So maybe he'll be throwing like 99 like Tanner. That would be great.
Yes. 100 mile an hour fastball incoming from Mason Adams.
I know he's not like certain. He's not like 6'5", 250 like Tanner is or whatever he is, but you know, that's fine. Like, work your magic.
Yeah. I mean, Cressy's a smart dude. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Well, how much can he do right now?
I don't know.
I don't know anything about Tommy John surgery other than like how long it takes. You know what I mean? Like is he like? How, I don't even know how much throwing.
He's throwing off of a mound. I just don't know like what percentage effort we're talking about at this point. But he is working out a couple times a week. So, so I want to throw this up here from Tom. He says, I think Drew Thorpe is a number three starter. He looked pretty good in 2024 before his elbow went. And I agree with you, Tom, but I'm just going to throw this out there because the changeup is the hardest pitch to get your feel back after TJ. So coming from, these guys that are coming back, like, and Mason Adams too, like you have to kind of be worried about that because the off-speed stuff, we'll see, you know, like the velocity is generally fine. The command and changeup are like the two most toughest things to come back. So these guys still have spin rates when they come back, Uncle Ted. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. one of the other side things I noticed, like in that Fangraphs thing, a piece that Fegan wrote, and it's a really good point. And like, I'm the guy that's always like, let these guys start for as long as possible. Like, you know, cause you want to see what you have. Right. But there are some interesting scenarios coming like this year, specifically like Aldrin Bautista. And I think Matthias Lacombe. So think about Aldrin Bautista. He's like 21, 22, something like that. I think we both think he's a starter. Doesn't have a ton of innings because of the injury last year. Right. So if you're the White Sox and you have like a Rule 5 decision on this guy, like you want to add him to your 40 man because you don't want to lose him. But if you're going to justify adding him to your 40 man, like he might need to help you. Like, I think it's almost like, it's not really a Grant Taylor situation, but it's similar, right? Like you might make the move with Matthias Lacombe and Aldrin Bautista to have them be relievers so that if they're on your 40 man, they're actually like helping your big league team. And that doesn't necessarily mean that like they're in the bullpen forever. It's just, sometimes these guys run out of time as starters in the minor leagues. And you're not going to have them on your 40 man, like starting games in the minors, because once you're good, you're just not going to have that space. So you have to like justify using the space. So I think that's interesting. Like if Bautista is scheduled to start in Birmingham. But if he's one of the guys who like is in your bullpen in September, because in anticipation of adding him, that sort of thing is, you know, because all the, we talked about this, like all these guys can't start.
No. And, you know, I don't know, like you also, one of the things that you have to figure out as well, you know, you got to figure out who you want starting, who you want in the bullpen. You also have to figure out who's able to handle high leverage as well, which is another piece to the puzzle. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. This here, not sure why we traded Yoandrés Gómez, seems pretty unnecessary with all the unknowns. I was kind of surprised they dealt him as well, because that was free money.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I feel like they must really like Everson Pereira, and my guess is that they think Gómez is like a multi-inning reliever, which that's fine. If like that's what they think, they feel like he's expendable because they can find a guy to do that. Like, he wasn't in their rotation plans, and they felt like it was finding free money, and you added two guys who they like. I don't know what Tanner Murray really is, but like he can hit and play in the middle infield. So, but I think they have plan. I think they have plans for Everson Pereira. I think he might be part of your right field platoon with another guy that we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I'm just so here's the issue is that I just wonder, you know, specifically about the White Sox, now that we're moving to, you know, position players here, how many platoons can you possibly have, you know, trying to piece together a lineup for every day?
I don't know. It's crazy. Cause I was like trying to like put Lenny and Sosa somewhere, and like you have Andrew Benintendi on your team. Like everybody talks about the infield, and like rightfully so, like, you know, you've added Murakami, who's probably going to play first base pretty much every day. And you have Mydroth, Montgomery, and Vargas, and two catchers who, like, can you play two catchers every day if you don't play Andrew Benintendi in left field? You know, I've seen a lot of, like, Brooks Baldwin. I like Brooks Baldwin. We both like Brooks Baldwin. I just, Brooks Baldwin can't be your everyday right fielder. Like, we just, like, can't. Like, he could play somewhere five times a week. You know, so like that's fine. You know, and then we're going to get to Jared Kelenic. I think Pereira's on the team. He's out of options. They like him, even if that means he's just a backup and he faces lefties. I think that's fine. But I mean, to me, like Lenin Sosa is the DH on this team. Now I know what that means for Edgar Caro. Like, does that mean he's not playing when Teal plays and that Teal's not playing? You know what I mean? So yeah, I mean, that's an issue. It also means that like you have to play Benintendi in left field, which I don't think they want to do. So, you know, I do think they might have some moving parts on the roster here somewhere still.
Yeah. As Troy brings up in the comments, he says, I'd do anything to get Benintendi off the team.
I think they would too. I just don't know like what that means. Like, I mean, find me. And we talked about this on the show in the past, you know, it's like Benintendi for like to Philly for like a Taiwan Walker or something. And you just stick a guy in your rotation. Like I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine with him for like an underwater reliever. I just don't know why anybody would want Benintendi.
Yeah, I mean, the only way that you could possibly get him off this team is if somebody saw the end of his 2025 season and said, you know what, he looks like he's finally healthy again, and maybe you manage to get somebody to bite, and even then you probably still have to eat some payroll, and you know, either in the form of, you know, like you said, an underwater reliever or something that, you know, is going to help the other team cut some payroll.
Yeah, baseball, I've seen that one too. Like, sign me up for that. Like, I'll take Eduardo Rodriguez in a heartbeat for Benintendi. I might even throw in something else. But I just, the thing that was weird about Benintendi last year was, so he had like a 103 WRC plus, but he was a way negative WAR player because his defense is absolutely atrocious now. But he had like a 125 WRC plus against lefties, and he was terrible against righties, and he had 20 homers. So, like, you know, my inclination would be, like, without looking at his stats, I would tell you, okay, yeah, he should only play against righties. He should never face lefties again. But he was good against lefties last year. So his whole profile is just kind of wacky.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, and especially, you know, now that you're trying to reshuffle who you've got on the major league roster. The fact that they made that Hail Mary deal right on, you know, Rick Hahn's way out the door almost with Benintendi, like, kind of messes things up here as we move forward with all this younger talent. We've still got this guy stuck here that is underperformed for the most part, and you're just stuck with that payroll.
Yeah. Uncle Ted, like, what are we doing, man? Like, I... Like, Chris Getz would love to trade Luis Robert for Cole Reagans straight up. That would be fantastic. He just doesn't have that kind of value right now. Like, Luis Robert would have been moved already. And you see, like, there were some rumblings that the Reds are, like, still in. They've wanted this guy for, like, 2 years, but they can't match up somehow. Like, because, like, I knew those two moves weren't prohibitive. I mean, that's, like J.J. Bleday and Dane Meyers. Like, come on. That can't be your... You know, then I made a joke about Kenny Williams because Reds fans were getting excited about Kyle Schwarber. And then you're like, okay, we'll settle for Luis Robert. And then it's like, nah, you're going to get JJ Bleday and Dane Meyers. It's like a peak Ken Williams 2010 poo poo platter offseason. Like, that's how, you know, like, you will get Dane Meyers and like it, sir. And look, I actually think Dane Meyers is like decent. Like, if you got Dane Meyers back as part of the Robert package, I'd be like, great, throw him in center field for a little bit and see what he has. But I mean, the Reds are like a fringe contender. Like, that's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, that whole thing kind of made no sense. I am pretty much at this point, I'm almost 100% sure that they just don't want to give up that comp pick, and that's why it hasn't happened yet.
Or more money. Like, my guess is the White Sox don't want to eat as much as they want to eat. So here's my question. Somebody brought this up to me, because I was very much against JJ Bleday as like a solution for the White Sox, because I just like I just feel like we've seen this movie before. And I don't know if I came off as like being pro Jared Kelenic. Like, the truth is, like, I don't really care. I just know people in the White Sox org that are pretty excited about it. That doesn't mean I'm excited about it. It's just, you know, it is what it is. So somebody was kind of like, oh, well, why were you anti Bleday and you're fine with this? And it's just like, to me, like, I don't care about minor league deals. Like, it's a minor league deal. Like, it doesn't matter. And like, the White Sox might think that Jared Kelenic's like part of their outfield solution, and they know him better than everybody else. But like, if he stinks in spring training, like, he's going to be in Charlotte. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you give guaranteed money to a JJ Bleday, like, you're going to have to suffer through watching him in the big leagues, because they're not going to cut him until he proves that he's bad in the big leagues. So that's why I was like fine with this one and not fine with the other one.
Yeah, so let's move on to that signing. Left-handed hitting former top prospect Jared Kelenic signed by the White Sox to a minor league contract with a invite to spring training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I think the amateur scouts are pretty excited. You know, like, Kelenic has kind of a bad rap for being, I don't know that he's a bad teammate, but he's like, you know, it's been like said that he's like kind of a head case a little bit and like kind of was doing his own thing. But I mean, look, he's like been three different places now and is kind of washed out. So you know, this is kind of like his last chance probably, but I do know that like some area scouts with the White Sox and some cross checkers, they've always just kind of been fond of him. So he played on their area codes team for 4 years in high school. He's a Wisconsin kid. They know him really, really well. They didn't like him enough to draft him over Nick Madrigal, which is like, you know, was my retort when I was getting text messages, you know, like, hey, you know, you could have just taken him out of high school. But yeah, so he got all the way up to like number 5 on the pipeline list. He was a big time prospect, looked like a power speed combo. But he just, you know, hasn't put it together in the big leagues. Now he did have what the one year in Seattle, he was pretty solid. He had like a 110 WRC plus for Seattle. I think one of the issues is like, I don't think he's great in the outfield anymore. Which isn't great. I do know that Ryan Fuller's already working with him. So like they think that there's definitely some fixes here that they've identified. And the way it was presented to me is like, you know, they know him the best and he needs like nurturing, basically. Like he needs somebody to love him, whatever. I don't know how true any of that stuff is. It's just kind of, hey, we've always liked him. We know him well. We think this could work this time. Look, I'm skeptical of any top prospect that's been bad for this long. But you know, he'll go to spring training and get a shot. And you know, you got a whole group of guys. They got some other interesting like former prospect outfielders too that are like coming to camp.
So I grabbed this video just to see if you remembered that it happened, because when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Jared Kelenic hitting a frisbee out of the air off of a tee.
Yeah, crazy.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he was like Waukesha West High School. Like Jared Kelenic was like the best prep player in the Midwest. Like he was supposed to be awesome, and
he was my guy.
Just wasn't. He just, you know, he just struggled in the big leagues. Baseball's hard.
So, my question here is like, I'm cautiously optimistic that this is going to work. Ooh, look at that. How do you like that?
That trick for Bertuzzi?
Oh, Bertuzzi. That guy's hilarious. We losers ain't losing today. Hey, losers, get in. Let's go losing. Yeah, you know, I wanted him in the draft initially. I kind of feel like, you know, my feelings on the Mets, and it's gotten a little bit better, you know, since he was drafted, but I didn't think that they would ever do a very good job. And then he got moved to Seattle, and I don't know, I'm not really too, not too thrilled, with, you know, most of the stuff Seattle's developed either. I'm interested to see what Ryan Fuller can do here. You know, I mean, it's possible that he's done for, but in Atlanta, I don't know. I haven't seen them do it like really. I mean, you know, of course, Ronald Acuna.
Yeah.
But I mean, like that's like saying, oh, look, Frank Thomas was good in the White Sox. They didn't develop him. He's just a beast. Well, you know?
I also think it's a different situation because there's like no pressure. Like Alex Anthopoulos picked him up to be like part of a left field platoon for a team that they thought was going to win. Like it doesn't really matter that much here, right? Like if you just like let Kelenic hit the righties and Pereira hit the lefties, like until Braden Montgomery's ready, it's like, okay. Like I just look, yeah, he's going to get a shot and we'll see essentially. You know, I was told, I don't know if I said this on the show, but I definitely told you and Elijah and some of the others. Like I had heard a few weeks back that the White Sox were after two players. I didn't have names, but the way that it was like described to me was that, you know, both of them like prospecty type guys, one free agent, one via trade, one of which they felt like coaches had failed him, and one guy who was blocked. And I'm pretty sure that Kelenic is one of those guys, and it's the one where they kind of thought that there were like some tweaks and stuff that they could do to like get him back. Like they kind of thought that he had been like failed a little bit. So we'll see if they're right.
Well, I mean, he didn't even hit in Gwinnett last year.
Yeah, he was horrible.
Yeah, if you can't hit in Gwinnett, there's an issue. So my thought is that also that maybe the mental part of his game has been kind of struggling lately, and he's going to need some help getting out of that. And, you know, if they've known him since he was a freshman in high school, you know, it's entirely possible that maybe they can do that.
Right. And I mean, like, you're, you know, you don't go sixth overall in the draft, like, without talent out of high school anyways. But, you know, I mean, Nick Madrigal did go fourth the same year. So it's kind of tough to, it's, you know, that was a rough draft class. But I mean, you know, he's just one of those guys, right, that looks like there's no way he can miss, and then all of a sudden he's 26 on his fourth team.
Entirely possible. All right, so do you want to move to this strange market?
Yeah, it's so weird, man. Like, we're all, people kind of came at me and they're like, you are the media. Did you see any of that? It was really funny.
I did. It was hilarious. I'm going to throw out these three contracts. Munetaka Murakami, 2 years, $34 million. Tatsuya Imai, 3 years, $54 million with an opt-out and some escalators. Very odd. We'll get into that contract. I'm almost positive. And then Kazuma Okamoto signed with the Blue Jays for four years, $60 million, so $15 million AAV. He did have a $5 million signing bonus, so that kind of cuts it down a little bit. But anyway, your thoughts?
Well, that one I'm not as surprised by.
No.
But the other two, I mean, you start hearing about these guys, like, from insiders and baseball people who do this, like, full-time for a living, was my point, you know? And you start, like, these guys are all going to get, like, $150 million each. And then there's, like, you hear nothing, right? And then Murakami's market came down to the White Sox, right, where it's, like, 2 years, 34. That was uncommon. And then the Imai thing was, like, weird. Like, I thought this guy was, like, a number two starter, and then all of a sudden it's like a week before he signs, and I hear all these like red flags that people have about the profile and like how weird he is. And like, I kind of thought like a guy like this without a qualifying offer attached would get like 5 at 100, like no problem from somebody. And he's settling for the deal that he got in Houston, but it's actually a really good deal for the player. It's a bad deal for Houston. I read something today from Matthew Trueblood, who writes for like Northside Cubs or something. And he basically made it seem like Jed Hoyer like thought that they were going to get a deal done with Imai with Boris. And Boris basically went to Houston and got a 1 year opt out, and the Cubs wouldn't do that, which they shouldn't do that. Like that doesn't make any sense. Like, so now you're Houston, you're paying basically $28 million. Because he's going to make like 23 plus the posting fee, and then he's going to walk at the end of the year, and you're going to get a second round pick for him. Like, hopefully they win the World Series. Otherwise, like, I don't really understand what they're doing. But yeah, it's a great deal for the pitcher. And then Okamoto's, I think, is probably normal. Like, 4 at 60, I think if you would have told me, like, that's fine. I thought it was interesting that it's the Blue Jays. Like, what does that mean for their other pursuits? But I mean, yeah, I don't know that the baseball industry media as a whole, and you want to lump me in that, like, that's fine. But like, it's not really what I do, like, predict contracts. We were just like, wrong. I think everybody's wrong on these guys. Like, they're just might not be that good, because I feel like they would have got paid otherwise.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, right?
Yeah,
you know,
weird.
You're expecting like $100 million contracts minimum for like a couple of these guys, and then all of a sudden nobody's getting anything. How much do you think that the labor possibility of a stoppage coming has to do with this?
Well, it sure seems like it's a factor. I mean, look, like if you're afraid of like signing Framber Valdez because you don't want to give him $100 million and give up a draft pick and forfeit international space, like that I totally understand. Like, I get why Valdez and Suarez and even Bregman and Tucker aren't signed yet. This takes forever because the qualifying offer system is stupid. And Major League Baseball penalizes teams for signing free agents. But a 27-year-old guy from Japan who could be like a number two starter, I'm just kind of surprised that he basically settled for a 1 year deal. I just thought he'd have a much bigger market than this.
Yeah.
How about the weird White Sox stuff? I just think it was like totally nonsense, like with Imai. Like, I kind of think what happened, like, I think like it was, so it was like a there was like a Yahoo report, but it was
out of
like
Japan,
but
right?
It was like translated weird, like, hey, like the Sox are bad. And I just like never really thought they were in on Imai because like it just like a short term didn't really make sense. Like, to me, like, if you're the White Sox and like you love this guy, right? And you don't spend on pitching. Like, the White Sox are the team that I thought should have been like, we love him, 5 years, $110 million, done. That's how you get a guy like that, right? But like, it doesn't make sense for the White Sox to sign him for 1 year with an opt-out. Like that doesn't make any sense for them.
I mean, if they're looking for lightning in a bottle and trying to get back to 500 with a chance to maybe do something, maybe?
Yeah. No, I guess. And then he like walks and you get like a second round pick. Like, I don't know. It's, like, the posting fee just, you know, it's kind of
weird. Yeah, and Uncle Ted says here, great publicity. I mean, maybe.
That whole thing was kind of weird. Like, people will believe anything that they see on the internet, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, the thing was, you know, it's like, Black Name says, I think the corrected translation said Imai likes wearing White Sox. That might entirely
well,
be
Well, you true. Listened you listened to the various David Keller interviews, right? Like I have no doubt, like, he was on with Garfine, and then I think he was on with Bruce Levine. Like, yeah. The way he talked about Imai, like, they knew him well. Like, I'm guessing, like, I'm sure they had a price. Like, hey, we like this guy, we could pay him this. I just never thought that was going to be something that Boris was interested in. I mean, the Boris playbook has been like, this guy is worth whatever, right? Six at 150. Fine. So then he's getting one at 30 to opt out to hopefully get five at 120 the following year. You know what I, like, that's like how he's been playing these free agent signings, right? So yeah, it's just, I don't know. I never really thought that they were involved in that one, but
I mean, for what they got him for, I mean, it's possible that, you know, maybe they would have done the deal if it was like $16 million. I mean, they, for crying out loud, they're paying Andrew Benintendi $15 million a year. Don't tell me that Imai is where they draw the line here, you know?
Oh, yeah. No. And apparently it sounds like Jed Hoyer would have done like a 2-year opt-out, but he had no interest in doing it after one, which I understand. Like, you don't want to pay up because you pay the posting fee on the total value of the deal. You know what I mean? Like the Astros paid a posting fee on $63 million or on $54 million or whatever that is. And it's going to end up being like one at 23 plus the posting fee. And you get a second round pick when he walks. Like, it's just, there's very, and like, there were some Astros fans on Twitter who were kind of like, oh, well, he could stay. I'm like, no, he can't. Like, that doesn't make it, like, if he stays, that means he was bad. There's no way he's going to opt into two at 40 or whatever that is. Like, there's no way he's doing, like, why would he do that?
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's the thing, is that I think that the White Sox may have done it if it was around $16 million a year. I just don't think that they would have given him an opt out.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, the White Sox might have done three at 54 without opt outs, but why would the player do that?
Yeah. And, you know, there, yeah, exactly. The only way that they would do that, I mean, I guess if, you know, you say you get your qualifying offer out there, but then you end up paying him like $40 million a year
right,
for that
exactly.
1 year, yeah. You know, if he takes it, which he would probably.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he looks, I mean, the video I watched, like, he looks pretty good to me, but I know people have like some reservations about the flat, like, his fastball is like not, doesn't have great shape, but
yeah,
I mean, we'll see.
And as Wolf brings up here, I also have this question, and I mean, it seems to have worked out fine with, you know, with the couple of pitchers that have come over. You know, I mean, it took a little while for, I'm blanking on his name, but
the newer Roki Sasaki.
It took him a minute to get his mechanical issues in, you know, back to where they're supposed to be. But that was before he left Japan that was starting to happen.
Yeah.
So, Wolf asks, how does the smaller baseball affect the Japanese pitchers? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it seems like most of them seem to be fine with it. I mean, I would assume maybe there's like a little velo loss there, but I don't know. I mean, you're talking about like a difference of like an ounce and a half, maybe.
Right.
You know? So
yeah, I mean, guys have come over and been pretty good. I don't, you know, I mean, it's probably no different than using a different baseball all throughout the minor leagues.
Yeah, I don't know. You published an article this week on the White Sox international signings period coming up here. It starts when? The 16th?
The 15th. So it's like Thursday 15th. The 15th. Yeah.
I will go ahead and link that in the description here.
Yeah, I got it a little bit early. You know, I hat tipped to Francis Romero, a buddy of ours. He had a few of the signings that I didn't know, and I kind of held off until I could confirm some things. But so the preview is on the site. They have some money left, so I would imagine there could be some other stuff that happens. Like, guys flip sometimes. They flipped a guy last year. Sounds like they flipped a guy this year already, too. So, you know.
From the Padres?
Yeah, I guess we'll see.
So, we are, you know, one thing that was mentioned earlier by James in the comments said, you know, it would, the international market would go a lot better if the White Sox could get that Marco Patti stink off of their signings. So, let's go ahead and have this conversation. How long, you know, you and I have had this conversation via text, but let's have this conversation out here in public. How long do you think it's going to be for these Marco Patti signings to kind of matriculate their way out?
It sounds like they think the 2027 class will be their first class that they would consider like a Keller class, basically. So, like, their top two players this year are both from Venezuela. That's like a big key, probably. Like, Patti was trending Venezuelan and Panama heavy, like, his last few years. And look, that doesn't mean these guys are good or not good. It's just, you know, what. So, like, Fernando Gratterall is their top signing. He's $1.5 million. Sounds like a pretty, like, compact, like, big bodied catcher that can actually catch with power. You know, we'll see, you know. And then Sebastian Rivero is a center fielder from Venezuela. Both those guys are getting $1.5 million. And then they got a pitcher, which is interesting because the pitcher's only like 400K, but pitchers are weird. Like, they don't get very much money. He's like one of the top pitchers out of the Dominican Republic. The Padres let him go back to market. I don't know if that's because they're short on money or whatever. And then he basically signed with the White Sox right away. He's already throwing like 95. So I'm really curious to see, like, in the Dominican Republic, like, how he does, because they just, like, don't really have guys with that. Like, even, like, Yoel Rodriguez last year, it's pretty good, right? But it's, like, low 90s changeup guy. Like, they haven't had one of these, like, high – because even, like, Yoiker Fajardo was a guy who, like, kind of pitches backwards. Like, he's got good off-speed stuff, but the fastball's not great. This guy has, like, a premium fastball already, and he's, like, 17 out of the Dominican Republic. And then there are like some other signings like from Venezuela and Dominican. But, you know, I do think like the biggest deal is just like the infrastructure changes. Like, there's a really good article too on Sox Machine from, I think, like back in September that James Fegan wrote, where he like highlights how David Keller is like trying to fix a broken process that left the organization like behind the industry on the international front. We've talked about this a little bit, just like, you know, they hired a bunch of new scouts. They've put data and technology like into place. They're restoring their scouting presence in Asia and the Dominican Republic. And then they have a new facility coming in. And then they did just hire Carlos Rodriguez as well, who has like a lot of experience with this type of thing. We talked briefly about them signing when we had Beefloaf on. They're signing like 12-year-olds, and we all kind of like laughed about it. But I mean, it does seem like they're trending towards being kind of like an international powerhouse, like starting in 2028. I mean, they just like are in on the top guys in the classes, like in those later classes. And yeah, like, so this was my next point. Sleepy beat me to it. So he said 2030, like if the rules stay the same for Braxton Basker. So yeah, I mean, this is when they'll implement an international draft, like once the White Sox actually get good at this, of course. But no. So yeah, they have like a pretty premium signing in 2029. They have like a, it's tough like bringing up this name now, right? But I mean, like Carlos Rodriguez signed Wander Franco. That's like the level of prospect that this Basker kid is. I mean, I know he's like 13 or whatever, but that's how this works. Yeah, like he'll be the top guy in 2030, and the Sox are committed to him. So I do think it's going to change. It just won't be this year. So there will be like some guys that trickle in. Like there, you know, there were like a handful of guys in last year's class that and I put it in the article if I can look really quick. So where they added like a few guys to their signing class. So Yobel Rodriguez was the 17-year-old Cuban righty who had a 2.97 ERA in the Dominican or in the the DSL. So they signed him last year. That was a new signing. Diego Perez was a guy that's had some buzz. He's another right-handed pitcher. And then they signed a Cuban outfielder, Asnel Castillo, who only played in like 16 games, but he's like a speedy center fielder that slashed 375, 444, 540. So those were guys that they added in last year's class that weren't like Patty signings. So I'm sure once they talk on like the 16th or 17th or whatever, like we'll have more insight into, you know, which guys they basically have agreements with for years, right? And which guys like they just signed right now.
Yeah, we'll find out who they've been friends with since they were 13, 14 years old. Which will be interesting. Yeah. Always find it interesting because that way you know who the priority guys probably are. Not only, I mean, obviously the money is probably generally going to be up here for the guys that they've been friends with for a long time, with their Buscone friends. You got anything else interesting for this week? Seems like a good time to.
Yeah, we can be. I mean, I'm curious to see if like the league turns back on like tomorrow. Like, there's just like a ton of guys that need to sign. You know, the league shuts down because there's like 10 players in DFA limbo. There's something on MLB Trade Rumors about it. It's really funny. So, like the White Sox example, when they signed Sean Newcomb, who we didn't really talk about, I think that's a really good signing if he's a reliever, and not a great signing if he's a starter. But they DFA'd Ryan Rolison. And he's just kind of been sitting on some list as a DFA player for 2 weeks during the holidays. So there is like some moratorium where you're just, so you'll have a bunch of like waiver claims and stuff. Like, I don't know if it's tomorrow, but it'll be this week sometimes. Yeah. Junkenzie Noel, right? Same thing. There's like 10 or 11 players who were DFA'd who we don't have resolution on because the league just kind of like stops for 2 weeks.
That makes sense because I never heard a resolution on what happened to Big Christmas.
Yeah, there's like a whole, like MLB Trade Rumors has like a whole article on it.
Okay, interesting. I'll take a look at it. I did not see that. Deep Hurch says his hot take is Antonacci makes the opening day roster.
I don't think so, but we'll see. I mean,
never know.
I'm curious to see if he's a non-roster invite. My guess is yes. I would imagine he'll be invited to spring training. All your guys on the 40-man will be there, but you would think Braden Montgomery and Antonacci will be. The one that I'll find really interesting is if they invite Caleb Bonimer to big league spring training.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe for like a week.
Yeah. I mean, Antonacci was in the AFL, so that would 100% not be surprised if he gets a NRI.
Yeah,
for
him,
sure.
Galaney, some of those like those types of guys. I just, you know, I mean, like Caleb Bonimer's not making your team. So, like, you know.
I'm still waiting to find out what happened to Carson Jacobs because in his last appearance, like season was ending, he got hurt, and I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, because that's another guy who, you know, they could just hike to the big leagues quickly. There's a reason why they had him in the Arizona Fall League.
Yeah, 98 mile an hour sinker coming from a 6'8" guy is generally pretty good.
I don't know how quickly we get big signings, but I mean, there are a few, obviously, like we brought a couple up, like Ranger Suarez and Framber are like both out there, and Zach Gallen is still out there. And then on the position player side, like you have Bregman, Bichette, and Tucker still. And these three big market teams that sign every player can't sign all these guys. So, like there has to be like a surprise somewhere. I would think there's one coming. Ken Rosenthal reported that they're like the Yankees were in talks for Edward Cabrera of the Marlins, right? Like, so we'll see. Hopefully the dam breaks and we get some more moves finally, because there's like a lot that has to happen still.
Yep. Oh man, baseball's bringing this. Oh man, yikes.
Gerald Rosado.
That was not good. He had command problems, and it just did not go well. So I guess we'll call it here. Sox Fest coming up soon.
Yeah, we should be there. We'll see people there.
Yes, indeed. There's that. There's also later on that night, there's the 108 thing afterwards. So if you guys are there, stop and say hello, because I know we'll be there as well.
We will. Also, it sounds like Bears Packers Saturday night, so we will be here next Sunday night.
Yeah, at 8 p.m. So Adrian brings up 43 days till pitchers and catchers report. That is fantastic. Carrie booked her flight for spring training tonight. That's awesome. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and walk us out here. You have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast, part of the Just Baseball Media Network. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. If you are looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on X at Future Sox, and now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content and want to support us here at Future Sox, there is a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat on our YouTube stream. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live, while helping us in the World Wide Web algorithms. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at JamesFox917. We appreciate all of you guys. Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks for coming and hanging out tonight. Thanks for hopping in the comments. Thanks for pushing the content. We appreciate you guys, and we'll catch up with you guys next week. All right, have a great day.